It's Thursday, September 22nd, 2011, and you're listening to episode 246 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 5 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
My name is John.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Chris is taking the night off because...
He's having old people sex. Yeah. It's his birthday.
It's his 2 millionth birthday.
Everyone think about him and Matt Luck.
I got a new hip for his birthday.
You know, Chris having sex is only not disturbing
hilarious.
Because of Julie.
No, it's not disturbing because it's funny. That said, Chris is in a long line of gamers that is doing better than he should on the physical plane. Nabbing Julie.
Yes.
You know, someone on the forums pointed out that we always make fun of Chris for being old when he's actually in the best shape out of any of us.
Yeah.
And to that I say he's still old.
He's not even actually that old. He's just older than us, which is enough to make fun of him.
Hey, all I'm going to say, I got two words for you. Jack LaLanne.
I don't know who that is.
He was a guy who was like in tip-top shape until he was like, was 90 and then he dropped dead.
I don't think, something like that, but yeah, he lived some
ridiculous age, was in great shape right up until the day he dropped dead.
Abe Vigoda.
Of a heart attack or something.
Yeah. It's kind of like how Kellogg died, where he died midair in a jump to prove how young he was.
Yep.
the grand ironies of history. Anyway, moving forward to not history, have a con announcement. Well, actually, I have a couple con announcements.
I have an announcement. Screw your con announcement. Blood Moon Goblins successfully funded. It cleared at almost 200% of funding, just north of $2,100. Thank all of you very, very much. Keith and I are hard at work banging this thing out, and I hope to get it out in the November-December range.
Yeah, and what we'll be doing is we'll be turning bloodmoongoblins.com into a development blog and sort of a Q&A sort of thing. As of right now, as of recording this episode, I think Blood Moon Goblins just shows a little ad piece that has some of Keith's artwork on it. But we'll be getting that.
Oh, you change it to the Guess Who's Taking Level Fighter? Okay, good.
So, but that will be getting turned into a full development blog here within the next week or two. Yes. Now, the couple con announcements I have. First off, we are still hoping to be at the game convention in Springfield on October 7th through 9th. The second thing is Fear the Con 5. I will be putting that site live and giving you guys a lot more details. Not this episode, but the next regular episode we do. So we'll be getting ready for that. That is the first weekend in May. All right, our bigger con announcement was, this is one that was sent my way that I thought was worth mentioning. If you live in the area of Bloomington, Illinois, and are looking for a con October 21st through 23rd, there's a convention called FlatCon. You can find more information at flatcon.com. I'll put that in the show notes. Now, what's cool about this convention is FlatCon is sponsored by Gamers for Life, and they donate all proceeds from the event to the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life. So if you're interested in going to a gaming convention and also want to support a great charity along the way, then be sure to check out FlatCon. Once again, I'll provide a link in the show notes. Now, with that said, as of right now, special thanks to Tex. I have in my possession one Windows game and 7 Xbox games ready to be given away. Now, the way I'm going to do this is I'll put a link in the show notes to an entry form, and we'll leave this up for a couple weeks because I know not everyone catches the show right when it drops. What I want you to do is to go out there, check off the games you're interested in, and then enter your email address, and that will be your entry. Please do not check off any games you are not interested in. So I've got 8 of them total. So if you only are interested in 3 of them, only enter for 3 of them. The only thing that we ask is, out of your decency, please don't enter for a game you're just going to put up on eBay. It's a dick move. There are people out there who really want these games who may not be able to afford them because it's a crap economy or whatever. So please don't be a douche. Go out there and enter if you're interested. Now, I realize we're asking for your email address. That's just so we can contact you. You have my word. We're not going to contact you for anything other than, hey, you won, your prize is on the way, I need your mailing address. We are not going to give this away. We're not going to solicit you. We're not going to sell these addresses. And the minute the contest is over, that entire list will be deleted. So please enter with complete confidence.
If Dan mishandles them, you will be my first client because I want half of the settlement when we sue him. So order with confidence.
All right. So here are the 8 games. The one for Windows Live is Age of Empires Online, The Greeks.
Yeah, I'm jealous of that one because I love the Age of Empires series.
There are 7 others. 2 of these are physical discs. The others are download codes. The other games I have, the download code ones are Comic Jumper,
Islands of Wakfu or Islands of Wakefu. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Section 8 Prejudice, Torchlight, Trenched, and then the two games that are on disc are Forza Motorsport 3, and then also a triple pack of Limbo, Trials, and Splosion Man.
So, I've heard car people goo about Forza Motorsports, although I've not heard anything about 3 specifically.
Well, and I'm actually kind of interested in Trenched. It's apparently a mech game.
Oh.
And Tex has been trying to get me to pick it up for a while so we can play it co-op or something to that effect, and I keep not getting around to it.
Your co-op and your PvE servers and your alliance.
Bitch, piss, wine, bitch, piss,
you
wine.
You and your working together. But MMOs are about recreating the state of nature that we lost when we interrupted the natural order of chaos with governments and society.
I have 4 guns. That's one for each of us. You really want to recreate society.
No. We're supposed to do it without losing blood. You've already given me a gun.
Didn't you see
for
that?
For which I'm thankful.
Wait a minute. So you want to recreate the brutality of society without...
No, the brutality of proto-society.
Oh, the brutality of proto-society. Sorry, I'm a little drunk. Didn't you see that Star Trek episode where they had the wars that weren't actually wars?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah,
they just ran the computer and they were like, you all have to be executed.
Yeah, now. And then Kirk destroyed their machine, so they actually had to start killing each other.
Yeah.
Which somehow did not seem like a productive way to end that, but nonetheless.
That's the opposite of the glory of MMOs.
You know, I'm just amused that the lawyer out of all of us is the one that's complaining about organization and rules.
Dude, this has been the way I've been playing since I was 12 on Ultima Online. I was an adrenaline junkie down in the lich room. I wasn't worried about the liches at all. The liches were little bunny rabbits to be beat up upon, not super undead lords. The guy I was afraid of was Killzone 69XXXX. I wanted to recall as soon as he showed up.
Well, on top of that, John's not exactly going into mediation either. He's going for criminal.
Yes, I'm
trial lawyer.
Aspiring here to be a criminal litigator.
All right, so anyway, those games are available. We'll run this for a few weeks. This is just a contest.
I've never connected those two aspects of my personality and preferences, but yeah, they're definitely connected. Anyway.
This is just a giveaway. This is not an auction. This is not linked to jack crap, except enter for free stuff. Get out there. If you're at all interested, if you have an Xbox or a Windows computer, get out there and check that stuff out. If you don't have an Xbox or Windows computer, then feel free to hook me up with someone from Sony or Macintosh, and we'll happily give their stuff away. I just don't get it for free like I do for my brother. Let's move on to today's gaming topic. As we have mentioned on the show, for a variety of unfortunate reasons that mostly center around entirely too extensive breaks, Chad's D&D 3.5 game kind of faltered and died, which is unfortunate because it was a great game. It was just gone for too long.
I entered it. It died immediately.
I blame it entirely on John.
I do too. Correlation may not be causation, but we'll never know now.
That game is now dead. And so we are in the process right now of kicking off a Battletech campaign that I am running. And we actually just had our first game. But here's what I want to do.
Tell all of you all about it, every single move in the map game. Yes. For the next 4 hours.
We are going to do not an actual play, but a recreation of the actual play.
Yes.
There's something that I want to do a little bit more often on Fear the Boot. I don't want to start getting into constant gaming stories and all that crap, but I think it would be helpful if we talked about some real-world examples and some detailed applications of some of these broader ideas that we talk about. Let's start off with, how did we as a group decide that we are playing Battletech? And what I'm hoping for in all this is that you guys, in hearing how we worked through some of our situations, might hear ideas on how you might work through some of your situations as well. We had shelves full of games and minds full of homebrews. How did we decide on Battletech?
Well, you guys have just been playing Chathdens and Dragons Chattel Finder Edition for like 2 years, and we decided we wanted to do something either modern or sci-fi. And we took a vote, silent, no collusion, done on paper to rank priorities, and like 4 out of the 5 PCs put Battletech in their number one.
I believe it was something to that effect.
Yeah. Naturally, Chad put it last.
We start off by saying, you know, okay, Chad's going to pass the GMing hat, so it passed to me. And like John said, we basically said, all right, here's the things that I'm willing to run. Take a note card, just number them 1 through 3. 1 is your first choice, 3 is your last choice. Whatever game has the least amount of points wins, and Battletech
had a third of the next game.
Yeah, it was a long lead ahead of second and third place. Yeah.
I would have been fine doing another fantasy, because I pretty much never get tired of Pathfinder, but I didn't just play one for 2 years.
Well, and that's something that I try to at least cut the middle ground on. It's certainly I have my preferences.
No, I'm happy as a pig and playing Battletech, too.
Oh, yeah, well, that's kind of...
And in my case, it was simple. You said, I'd like to run Battletech, and I was thinking, wow, I've never done a BattleTech campaign. I want to do a BattleTech campaign. Yeah, it was that simple.
Part of finding something everyone's willing to play is you have to go into this accepting compromise long before the game's been put on the table. Okay. You have to accept some degree of compromise. And we did ask everyone of these ideas. So I think we actually originally started at 4 or 5. We said, look, is there anything anyone here just outright wants to veto? They just will not play.
We did EOR, SOG, and BTEC.
And BattleTech.
I think that was it. We might have entertained Star Trek and Cyberpunk.
Star Trek. Yeah, it was Star Trek and Forgotten Realms.
Okay, yeah.
And those were the two that got outright vetoed.
Yep, because in your and my case, both, Dan, we've got other Star Trek games we're both in at the moment.
And with Forgotten Realms, we just come out of a fantasy game. And so those were outright vetoed. But of the three left, I mean, you have to accept part of this process is if your number one game is not picked, don't be a douche. Freaking man up or woman up about this and play the game and try to have fun. And you know what? You actually might end up enjoying it if you're not being a jackass and have the sour attitude about the whole thing.
I don't think we have that problem.
Not presently, no, but I have seen it in the past with other groups. I have seen it in the past with this group.
Okay, I meant like right now.
Correct. Okay. But I think it is a noteworthy point.
It's a noteworthy point.
I would point out this group has gone through many iterations too. So when we say this group, it's not necessarily even this group anymore.
No, he meant you.
No.
I did mean Wayne. Yes. But apart from me and Wayne, no, that is true. No.
The exact 6 people around this table now have been a gaming group for all of 2 months. Am I?
Yeah. There's 4 of us.
Which of us have you seen?
No. The gaming table.
Oh, sure. The gaming
not
table.
Not the pie? Okay. Yeah. No, I meant the game has never been Dan, Pat, Wayne, John, Chad, Beth until July.
Yeah.
And I'm and like, Pat, I'll try anything once.
No, yeah. Pat, I'll try anything twice.
You got to roll them over at least. I mean, that's... Let's talk next about how we designed the group. Because once we arrived on BattleTech as the game, yeah, I mean, that's a system, and I'd say it's a setting. It's actually settings.
Yeah, BattleTech is its own mechanical system. It is not its own genre. It's its own over-genre. BattleTech as Davian regulars versus BattleTech as mercenaries versus BattleTech as pirates versus BattleTech as clanners versus BattleTech as Innersphere's, and there are clanners versus there are no clanners. There are so many variables and tumblers and colors into this machine that you can play 2 BattleTech games that have giant robots and feudal politics in common, but that's it.
Not even have feudal politics, depending on when you're playing.
That's true. If you go farther away back enough, you could basically play an Isaac Asimov unitary Galactic Empire game with killer robots.
Yeah, and in our case, we actually spent more time debating that than we did what game we were going to play.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. We got to BattleTech in 20 minutes, and we got to legitimate but small and periphery-based mercenaries in 2 hours after that.
That was an idea that worked just as well in terms of designing the group as it did picking the game, is we really use the exact same approach all over again. If I'm running BattleTech, here's a list of groups you guys could play. Here's what it means to be from each group. Here's the different time periods. Here's what I'm willing to run. Here's what I'm not willing to run. Is there anything anyone wants to outright veto? And a couple things did get vetoed.
I think the only hard veto was Chad said he didn't want to see a clanner.
Okay? Yeah, he didn't want anything that was...
No mention of the clanner.
Yeah, late 30s, 40s and forward, which is okay, that's fine, you know. Actually, one of the stories I really wanted to tell was about something that occurred during the clan invasion. But you know what? Part of compromising is the GM has to compromise as well.
Not as much.
Well, but here's the thing. I had stories I could tell and other things. If I had come to the table like that's the only story I've got, then look, if the GM is checked out, the game is dead. If a player's checked out, you have a problem. You ought to fix it. You ought to compromise on it. If the GM is checked out, it is a non-starter. Right. There is no saving the situation. And so I never put anything on the table purely for the sake of placating one person or another. I really put forth, these are things where, yes, I may have my preferences, but these are all things where I can tell a viable story that I will be excited about.
And I was intuiting, rightly or wrongly, during that conversation that you actually wanted to run Silver Scorpion.
Yes, very much.
Which is why I kept asking you, Dan, what do you want to run? What do you want to run? Well, you can go ahead and say it.
That was my first vote. When we went to voting, that was what I put first. But there were other stories I'm willing to tell. And so when it came down to voting, we did the same thing. Okay, here's the 3, 4, 5, however many ideas it was for a group concept. Let's now rank those once again
one with the lowest points wins. Look, this can apply to any game. Let's get out of Battletech. Let's say you're playing D&D. I mean, presuming you voted D&D is what you're going to play next. You can then say, okay, well, I could tell a Forgotten Realms story, a Dragonlance story, or a Ravenloft story, and you vote those up. And that's okay, within Forgotten Realms, I could tell a story in Symbia, I could tell a story in Candlekeep, or I could tell a political story in Thay. And then you vote those out. And you can keep using these processes such that you know that the general will of the group is being met. And I don't think this is the only method of selection. There are some groups where the game master just sits down and says, this is the concept I have. Get behind it or don't. You know, I'll tweak it to try and fit your guys' needs. Yeah. But this is the story I want to tell who's in. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for our group, we found that this kind of compromise generally seems to work the
best.
And
in my online group, we do it more like that. Someone will come at the end of the campaign with the next campaign that they really want to run. And it can be vetoed. But if you're the vetoer, you better have a counter solution. It's like the restaurant game.
Yeah.
We play the restaurant game of GMing, and since
if you veto
in
it,
our
you
group
have
of four,
it.
There are only two people who are willing to GM, it's a real short game.
So one thing I want to bring to this group at some point later on that down the line when I'm running something is the idea of coming to the game and just having a vague idea. Let everyone pick their genre, come up with the world around that, then pick the system from there. Because I, unlike Chad, I don't want to go through the trouble of creating a system. And then coming up with the story.
I'm designing
after
a game that. And I'm not even making my own system. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I like the idea of actually letting everyone come to the table, design their world, design the characters. But once you know the characters, then take your approach, Dan,
right,
and create the story from there. Because at that point, the GM is just one more person at the table throwing out ideas, getting it going. And that's when they can get excited about it. And that's when they veto, is when everyone's building.
There's actually a whole slew of mediation concepts for helping to make a fair decision. I can't remember them all. I was actually taught a whole list of these at one time. But there is one that I remember that actually could work in a role-playing game. Have you guys ever heard of something called the divider-chooser method?
No.
Okay, here's how the divider-chooser...
I think I heard about that from a Taiwanese woman on the streets in Vegas, but she didn't have very good English.
Been there.
Did you choose her, Pat?
Yes.
Okay. I divided her.
All right, here's how the divider-chooser method works. And actually, I guarantee you, whether you've heard the phrase or not, you've probably seen this at play somewhere in your life. Let's say that there is only a part of a cake left, and there's two kids in the household, and both kids want some of this leftover cake. Well, here's what mom or dad does to break up this fight. You come in with the knife, you kill them both, and then you eat the cake for yourself.
Yes.
You come in with the knife, and what you do is you say, okay, one of you can cut the cake, and we'll flip the coin. You know, heads, it's Jimmy, tails, it's Janie. One of you gets to cut the cake. Whoever does not cut the cake gets to pick their piece first.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, and so what this does is this, of course, in that particular situation, motivates the person who is dividing to be as fair as they can. Because obviously, if they make a huge piece and a little piece, unless they have a really altruistic sibling, they're about to end up with a little piece. And I think you do some games as well. In fact, that's kind of what we did with our voting system, but not exactly. Let's say as a game master, I walk in and basically just put down two games. I got two stories. It's going to be one of these two. You guys get to pick which of the two. So I have subdivided my gaming catalog down to the things I'm willing to run. I will now recuse myself from the process, and you guys may choose from my division what it is we're going to do.
Well, I think one other thing that came up in this one, I came up with a character concept very early on for Silver Scorpion, and I was able to still use that character concept with what we picked, which was mercenaries. I mean, a lot of this stuff can be adapted. You know, you may have a story that you had intended for a fantasy game. You give them the option of fantasy sci-fi, they pick sci-fi. Depending on what that story was, you may still be able to use it.
Well, same sure, thing with you can characters. Translate the human elements of genre characters across the various genres.
But let me ask you guys a general question. Would you feel okay being robbed of choice? If I came in and simply said, I have this great idea for a particular game, I'm running this system, this setting, this time period, I don't hand you your characters, but I even say this is your group concept. We are going to play Forgotten Realms prior to the Chime of Troubles. You guys are mercenaries in Symbia.
I would be fine with that because I basically do that to my players and have it done to me in my Wednesday online group. I did it to you in the Goblin game.
You know what? And I'm an unusually malleable person in that regard.
No.
But I'm curious, do you guys, what about Pat and Wayne? I'll take a vote of you guys here, and then we'll conjecture wildly, because that's what we do in For the Boot. Of, do you think the general populace would agree? Pat, what about you? If I sat down and just dictated to you, this is what we're playing, how would you feel about that? Would you want to be included in the decision process, or would you be okay with just being handed a final product?
I would actually be okay with it, and I think saying that you're dictating it is maybe a little bit too strongly worded, because I think that is often what happens in a lot of groups. I've certainly, like John said, I've been in that situation a lot in playing. When it comes down to what are we going to play, the GM basically has an idea. It's one idea as opposed to a handful of ideas. I was sitting here listening to the first part of this episode, thinking, Jesus, you're awfully lenient and giving and all the choices that you're giving the people. It's nice, but at the same time, I think it's unnecessary.
I think it depends on the level of experience between the gamers. In a group at the table that are really all or almost all very savvy gamers, a more democratic process is practical. It's always possible, but it's more practical if everyone knows what they want and how to get it. But I think a lot of the time, player characters are looking for a GM who has a vision, who lets them make their own characters and express their own heroic vision of themselves within the setting. But there is a game they want to run. There may even be a plot they want to run. Of course, the GM allows the players to affect that and shape the world and themselves. But I don't think there's anything wrong with having an authoritarian GM to player relationship that starts even at the point of game selection.
I think for me, it's a matter of the situation. If this was something where someone came in and just said, I have this idea I would like to run, I'd be more receptive than someone just sitting down and saying, here's what we're doing.
Well, right. No, of course you have to.
I'd be cool with it too if it was just out of the ordinary thing. If someone did this every game, okay, we are playing Bards in Dungeons and Dragons. And then when he was done with that campaign, sat down, we are doing Star Wars now. That would annoy me too. If a GM comes in and he's overly excited, I have this idea, I want to do this.
Right. I'm not talking about Mistress Leather Nipples walking in and ordering me to play this game and this campaign in this way. I'm talking about, it's the anarchy period between campaigns. One guy stands up and says, this is my idea. Are you in? If I like it at all, I say yes. And that's the end of the decision input that I give to him until it's time for character creation and group template.
I think one thing really cool about the group we have now, at least half of the group are willing to run games.
Yes.
That means that
is actually generally unusual for groups.
It's extraordarily unusual. Yeah. Not only are we willing to run games, we like it.
Yeah, it means we can get different types of games, different feels of games.
You, me, and Chad are not looking to avoid having to be the DM.
Yeah.
We like it. I don't know how much you like it, Wayne, but I know you will.
Yeah, I want to run a game.
Okay, well,
again,
then that's four. That's four out of six. Pat.
Bath.
I've seen him before.
Furigon. Oh, wait, no, he'd probably run a game.
Who would?
Furigon.
Who's Furigon?
The dragon right behind you. Furigon the dragon.
Oh, right. Him. Yeah, he would. He'd run a better game than some I've been in.
But yeah, it's something really cool.
He's strangely more lively fellow than one of my prior GMs.
Yeah.
Every GM runs a game differently. Everyone approaches it differently. So we all get a chance to play. We all get a chance to run. And we get to see different views on how a game's going to be run.
Hearing you guys say that, I do wonder to some extent which of my gaming experiences is the more unusual one. Because this group, you guys are fairly open to whatever. You're fairly compromising folks. I think if I sat down and wasn't a jerk about it, I was reasonable, I was polite, I could probably say, you know what, I've just got a bunny in my butt to run this. Let's do it. You guys would probably go along with it. My prior group, they were the reverse. I do not think they would have been very receptive to that. If I had simply sat down and dictated, this is what we're going to do.
How many of them DM'd? None but you?
For the most part, yes. Here's the thing. There was one who would DM, but for everything that was holy, we tried to keep him from DMing because he was just awful.
I see.
And there was another one who was willing to DM, but not often. And his games tended to die by his own hand very quickly. He would typically get about three games and then admit, I have no idea what to do with this anymore. And the game was over.
Wow.
So the only person who could DM and keep the game going, I'm not trying to sound arrogant, it was just truth, was me.
I've been in that group
and
before.
It's
all newbies, that's just how it is. Yeah, in college, I was in groups of all newbies all the time.
Well, see, and what sucks, there was a guy in that group who would have been a great GM, but had gotten burned a couple times back in the teenage years. And despite the number of talks we had with them saying, dude, we're not teenagers anymore, he kept refusing to GM ever again. But either way, the point being that this group would not have been nearly as receptive to me simply coming in and dictating what we were going to play. And once again, this goes back to one of Fear the Boots' Ten Commandments of know your group. I guess you just have to know. I guess with this group, I probably overestimated the reaction. Maybe I should just come in and dictate it. I don't regret it.
This game's off
to a great start.
No, I don't regret the way you did it with us.
Yeah.
My point in asking that counter question was, I think habitual GMs are much more willing to be malleable as PCs. Consistently, for a decade, the most horrible stick-in-the-ass PCs I've seen refuse to touch the GM seat like it's made out of spikes of lava.
You speak truth. Okay. I can't argue with that.
All right. Pat, I'm sorry. You started saying something?
Well, I just say, I take umbrage with the choice of words. It's, again, with, you know, coming in and saying that you're dictating what they're going to do. I think that's just too strong a word.
We're using authoritarian terminology.
Because, honestly, I think if I were to sit in a group, or if you would have come in and just simply said, okay, this is the game I'm going to run. You're going to like it or you're going to GTFO. I'd probably balk at that just in principle.
Right.
I mean, you know,
I would balk at that presentation, but you know, I've used the words you're objecting to and I take them back.
And I think, cause you know, it's all in the approach. Like you're saying, it's, you're not coming in and just, you know, ham-handedly saying this is what we're going to do. It's, you're coming in more with an attitude of, this is a game that I would like to run.
Exactly. That is the one,
you don't say, hey, this is one of the four games that I would like to run. You know, you just come up with the one idea and say that, and I think you're going to get a much better reception. Right. And I mean, I'm not talking about just you, I'm talking about for people out there. You're thinking about doing that as a GM.
I intentionally picked the word dictate because while it's a harsh word, it is dictionary accurate. And just,
what I mean, speak.
Because, oh, okay. I know we've talked about this before, I know what you're saying, but again, I think.
Well, no.
Though it's dictionary accurate, it carries baggage. There is notation to it that I think.
Here's what I'm saying. When I come into a group, what I'm talking about is not saying, "Well, I would like to do this," because that sounds like it's open to debate. That gets us back to we're voting as a group. I am saying I come as a GM. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to be a dick, slam a book down, say this or GTFO. But I am saying I come in as a game master and say, okay, for the next 6 months, I'm going to run this game, and I hope you guys will play it with me. There's no discussion here.
I wouldn't even go that far.
You know,
I would say, this is my vision. Would you guys like to play it? That does not open it up for,
with what you're saying.
Because here's what happened.
Just adding the word like, that is going to vote. Because, that's going to say you guys.
Exactly. Because here's what happened. I came into this group. And once again, I don't regret our current campaign. It's off to a wonderful start. But I came in and said, I would like to run a particular Battletech story, but that word alone opened it up to Chad very fairly. I'm not bashing Chad here. Chad very fairly counter-proposed, well, what if we adjust the idea like follows? Well, by the time we had adjusted the idea to meet his concerns, it was no longer the idea I came in with anymore.
Okay.
And so that's why I chose the word dictate quite carefully. That was intentional because that's exactly what I mean. Not being an ass, you're polite, but nonetheless, you are firm in that I'm not opening this up for discussion. This is what I want to run. Are you in or out? And of course, you can say you're out.
You open it to the discussion of yay or nay, and you invite someone else to run something else. You don't break the game over the vote of no confidence in this exact hardline concept you have.
Right.
And you certainly don't break the group.
But that was my question, is how would you guys respond to someone coming in and not being a jackass, but nonetheless being very specific of saying, look, Mercenary Assembly of Forgotten Realms, period.
If you came in and said, Shadowrun Native American Magic campaign, I would say, Dan, I like you, but I'm out this time. If you came in and said almost anything else, I would be like, yes, I will find a way to express an interesting character in the setting. I know the bug up your ass is going to propel you to be the best GM you can be. And I don't want to have a long parlay about where we are in the world and what time it is. And I just want to do what you want to do.
Well, and that's part of what would motivate me as well is, look, GMs have dumb ideas. Heavens, I've had dumb ideas. GMs I've played under have had dumb ideas. But if the GM is excited, motivated, that campaign is probably off to a good start.
Yep.
And so I would generally be willing to say, okay, I'm going to at least give this a try. But once again, my experience in past groups has been, if I don't have that opening for compromise, that opening for group veto, they do not respond well.
I think I just want to come in and say this as well. Building on what you just said there, I think the important thing is that if you have a GM that is excited and passionate about an idea that he wants to play, let him run it for God's sake.
Yeah.
Because honestly, there's nothing worse than on the flip side. If you have to go through compromise after compromise and you finally browbeat your poor GM into playing something that you want to play mm-hmm. that he's not excited about
and
running.
Of course you
guess what kind
it.
Of game you're going to have? You have a shit game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good Lord, if the man or woman is excited about running a game, I mean, unless it's just something that you're so diametrically opposed to not playing, give it a shot. You know what? You may find you may come to learn something to find that you really like this. It's something you haven't done before, or maybe it's something you've done before and hated, but now you're finally getting it done right.
Well, I think you do reserve a right to say this concept is in such a genre or spin that this is part of fiction that I just don't enjoy. This is a substrain of sci-fi. I mean, Wayne, if you came over with a Spelljammer box, I would say call me in 6 months or 6 minutes or, you know, whenever this campaign ends. And I think every player always has a right to do that. But I think the GM also has a right to come in and say, this is the concept. I don't have to run this. Someone else can run something else. But if you would like to play in this world, this is where it's going to be and this is how it's going
to
be.
I would say don't get your feelings hurt, though, if you come to a group like that and take that hard line and someone else presents an idea and the group goes with that.
Oh, no, hell no. That's a great opportunity. Turn around and be a PC in that universe. Most GMs are not heartbroken when that happens.
There are several topics that I want to hit from here. One of them, there's not a snowball's chance in hell we're going to get to this episode, which is several people have asked in the past for the kinds of documents that I use when running a game. And so I'm actually going to walk through some of those documents and post several of them online. But I just ain't going to get to that this episode. There's just too much other stuff we need to cover. So we'll get back to that probably in the next regular episode we do. But there are two things I want to talk about. One very briefly, just because I don't think there's a whole lot to say. And then one at length. The one I want to talk about briefly is collaboration in established setting. With Chad's game, he allowed a lot of collaboration, but it was also very easy to do because of the fact that Chad came in with a very blank slate, that he had maybe a few concepts, but they could be bullet pointed on a note card. And so what he did was he allowed each of us not just to develop our characters, but to develop the entire section of the world that our characters came to represent. Now, in Battletech, obviously, unless you're just throwing canon out the window, which we are not, you don't have that same broad freedom. You can't develop the entirety of what's going on in the Federated Commonwealth. That's already dictated for you by a setting book. But we were able to still find ways to let people have meaningful collaboration in the game. And I think that's important because it gives people a sense of emotional investment and ownership. And I think that is something that is critical to building that buy-in from the players.
So the difference that I've noticed on these type of things, either creating the whole world or just creating aspects of it, it's basically the macro versus micro setting. In some games, you're creating both the macro and the micro. In other games, like established settings, Battletech, Star Trek, you're creating your micro setting.
Yes.
You create your ship versus
yes.
the universe.
And Wayne, you actually used some great terminology there that I didn't have in my notes, so I'm going to steal now, which is what we did in Battletech is the macro setting's already built, so what I let you guys build was the micro setting. Yep. Okay, the Federated Commonwealth is already designed, but you know what? Your mercenary corps is not. The families you guys come from are not. These subplots that you guys have in your background that I'm going to try to work into the game, which we'll probably get to in the next regular episode, those are things that are not defined. And so I still gave you guys a fair amount of levity.
And we got to have that.
Yeah, in designing things, it was just different things. It wasn't whole worlds or whole empires, but there was still some sense that you could create more than just your character.
And even when I go in with the hardline campaign setting, like I just described with my online group, the players always have the micro setting. We zoom in far enough for them to have some corner that is defined by their priorities. In the Goblin Games example, it was the temple. I made the tribe, but we looked at the class balance. It was two clerics and a barbarian and a bard. And I said, okay, this is you guys as a whole. Your social clique, for better or worse, controls the religious outlook of most of the rest of the tribe. And because of that, you have power. Design it how you want to. We've done the same thing with our mercenary unit in this game.
Yeah, I personally don't feel any less attached having just done a micro setting versus a macro. I have seen two approaches to doing the settings, though. There's like what Chad did and what like John was just describing, where your character has some aspect of the world they're tied to and they're creating it. In our last game, Pat was creating the Elder Society. Dan, you were doing the Gnolls. The other way I've seen it is more of a round table where everyone sits around together and throws out the concepts and they create it all together. Our mercenary group was more like this, where we're sitting there and we're all throwing ideas out around the table.
So I have a question for you guys. Of the macro and the micro, which do you guys prefer? And I'm going to answer first. Since it's my question, I can do that. I actually prefer the micro setting as to the macro, because I think that I can get a lot more fine details in taking a small little section of the world, mainly about either my character or my family or whatever, and really flush that out, as opposed to the macro setting, because by its very definition, it is so large and there's so much that can be done with it. It's hard to really fully develop it, I think.
I agree with you, down to the
very, you know, the nitty gritty details.
Especially because the micro setting is and can be much more reactive. We are not going to crush Comstar. We might crush the Fox's Raiders and she might crush us. This is the fun of having a struggle at a comprehensible level where winning and losing can be life, death, or worse, dispossession.
I like them both, but if I have to vote, I'm going to vote for the micro as well, but for a slightly different reason. I want to phrase this carefully because I have played under a lot of excellent game masters, but it is the nature of a game master, myself included, that our job is to convey story. And part of conveying story is, of course, inextricably linked to setting. You have to do something with the setting. And what it always feels like to me is if I take the time to design a macro setting, the game master can't tell a story without somehow referencing that macro setting. And when they reference that macro setting, they have to develop it in a direction. Before we even get to, do I like how they developed it? We have to first get to, do I think they understood it well enough to even begin developing it? Mm-hmm. And now, I thought Chad in this past game generally did a really great job with that, because there were several times he was about to do something with the Gnolls and he would ask me, is this what the Gnolls would do? And I had to correct him on several occasions, say, no, they would not. I think you don't quite get what I'm going for with their society. And he was very receptive to that. So don't get me wrong. I think Chad did the best job I have seen yet, but it is still very hard to not feel like you're having your ideas hijacked. The great thing about a micro setting is, look, I can tell a story in BattleTech that involves all these different things and never once step on the toes of the mercenary core history you guys have developed. Don't ever have to touch it. I can involve it in the game, but I can tell stories about tons of other groups and how they collide with your micro setting because they come from the macro setting. They're another marble out in this great big field of marbles.
Yep.
Whereas with the macro setting, you're describing the field. You're not describing a marble.
I personally like both, and it really depends on the type of game and the GM that's running it. You know, some GMs are more comfortable with the idea of the players creating the world. And the macro setting could be a city. I mean, if your entire game takes place within the city, that could very well be your entire macro setting.
Right.
It's not as big as a universe or something like that. I'm much more comfortable with the players creating, you know, a city than I would be, here's how physics work in this world.
All right, let's get now to our bigger topic. And the episode might run a little over, but I'm okay with that, because I think our past two have been a little bit short. So if we run a little bit long, that's okay with me. This is something that Fear the Boot has been waiting 5.5 years to do, which is a revisit of the group template. This is a document we have referenced repeatedly. I don't keep careful surveys of where we're referenced on the internet, but the few times I've done it, one of the things that is most referenced in regard to us is our group template. It has become one of our flagship ideas. And quite frankly, we have, in the course of making this podcast, watched multiple campaigns die for lack of a group template. And given the fact that it's been 5.5 years since we last talked about it, and of the people that talked about it, two are on the mics right now.
Hi.
Two are new additions to the show.
Hi.
So
hi.
We've got new opinions and changed opinions. I think this is a subject I want to revisit. Let me first start by setting up what a group template is and why it is important before we get down to the nitty gritty. And what I did was, prior to this episode, I gave everyone a copy of the two group template documents, the group template itself and the questionnaire used for prepping yourself for the group template. I asked them to mark it up, and I see William Tickler has made some marks on his, but let me start by setting up the group template. The purpose of a group template is before you get to character creation, when at this point all you have arrived at is a system and setting you're playing, maybe the general high-level concept, we're playing mercenaries in BattleTech. That's really as far as you've gotten.
The purpose of a group template is at this point, before anyone has staked out their claim to playing a particular character concept, you sit down and design, this is what the group as a whole is supposed to look like. This is why these people came together. This is why they're going to stick together. This is what they have in common. This is what they struggle over. And this really serves two big purposes. And we have hung ourselves by not using our own document as often as we should. And those two purposes are, number one, a starting cohesion to the group. This doesn't mean everyone holds hands and agrees on everything. But what it does mean is that when the game kicks off, you have some reason to be together. You have some goals in common. The game master knows how to motivate you. You guys know why you're sticking together. And it also helps alleviate some of those first game jitters of, why do I have any reason whatsoever to work with this outside of the fact that he's the other guy in the bar with a P tattooed on his forehead? The second thing it grants is lasting cohesion. As the game evolves, as the game changes, yes, there's going to be conflict. Yes, there's going to be disagreement. That makes great role playing. But having a group template helps you to know that the characters still have enough in common that the game master can continue to motivate them and continue to trust that whatever tensions they have will not be so great as to utterly derail the game. Now, I'm not saying the group template guarantees everything's going to go perfectly. It doesn't. But what it does do is it's like due diligence. It helps you reduce the likelihood of any of this happening. All right. So with that said, the group template, as we posted it, and you can find this in the resource section of our website, going all the way back to episode 2, we posted the group template in 2 documents. The first document was a list of 10 questions that we felt the group should go over and ask themselves and at least answer together. You don't have to write down the answers, but at least contemplate as a starting point to make sure they have some sense of what it is they're doing. And then the actual group template is a 3 question, or it has like 3 little blocks that if you fill these out, you have probably gotten a good sense based off of the first document, 10 questions, of how this group is going to fit together. And with these 2 documents in hand, you can then start saying what kind of characters we're going to play, and you use that group template as a plumb line to make sure your individual character is going to fit into the flow and the limits of the group as it has been agreed upon by the team as a whole. I think I'm going to go ahead and read these questions at least briefly. And Wayne, or any of you guys, if you have questions, comments, disagreements, things you want to expound upon, please do so. And based on how significant these are, I may or may not release an updated version of the group template. So, all right. So on the questionnaire, the first question is, does the game master need our group to be something in particular for his or her plot? This goes down to, he wants to run a Sembian militia campaign. So the answer is yes. He needs us to be a Sembian militia. The answer may not be anything at all. Or it could be he just wants us to be from the Forgotten Realms. I don't know.
Legitimate question.
Of what does the game master need to make this plot work? If you don't know, ask the game master. If the game master can't really explain it, you're already headed for trouble.
If the game is you start on level 1 and the dungeon goes down to level 20, just go ahead and roll your cleric.
Question 2, what will our group be when the game starts? So let's say, for example, we're going to become heroes who save the realm. Do we start out as farmers? Do we start out as disparate adventurers? Do we start out as the crew of a cruise line starship prior to the pirates invading and changing our lives? I mean, who knows?
It depends if you want to do a prologue game. We kind of just did a game that started before the plot.
Well, in our case, I think it turned out really that for us, questions 1 and 2 were answered the same way. For the purpose of this game, the group was a low-end mercenary group. When the game started, you're a low-end mercenary group.
Yes.
Now, the game itself started a little bit in media res, and once again, we'll get to that next regular episode.
We had to find a way to reduce a functional, happily operating mercenary group to the 5-player characters, so we slaughtered 2/3 of them in the opening crawl.
The third question is, when and how did the characters first meet? Now, I want to note an operative word in there. It says did. Now, did could say will. When and how will the characters first meet?
That was actually the first comment I have was, have they met? Have they all met? Have only some of them met? Is the meeting going to happen in the first session? I think a lot of these questions as we go through them can be asked of groups that are just coming together for the first time in the first session. That doesn't mean that they won't have a close-knit reason to be together.
Right.
I think it's more important to go through these questions if that is the case.
I absolutely agree with you, Wayne. And actually, what you're describing is what led us once upon a time, long before Fear of the Buddha existed as an entity, to start doing this group template. We had one too many games where the characters were first meeting and they failed to find any cohesive reason to stick together. Am I therefore saying, I believe dogmatically, you cannot run a game that starts off with the characters first meeting? The answer is no. I think you can run a great game where that happens.
But it's so boring. I mean, come on, gentlemen. Wouldn't we all just rather start on the third date?
I agree with
you. We can do this with the group template.
See, and that's exactly where I ended up was, you know, if you want to run a game where people start as they don't know each other, okay, fair enough. As a game master, I got tired of cat herding. I got tired of having everyone create their character in a vacuum, and then it was my responsibility to figure out why these morons would stick together. I got tired of doing that. So like you said, I said, screw it. Let's start on the third date. Everyone in this campaign must know at least one other person. And there may not be one person who is the central focus of the group. Nope. You cannot have one person upon whom the entire group hinges.
Wayne.
And well, no, that's not the case. Because like in your case, you guys know Wayne, but your and Pat's characters are also brothers.
That's true. Oh, we definitely have a wide network of interconnectivity.
Yeah.
That is defeated by our multiple and relationships.
That's my point.
But it definitely harkens to Wayne. I mean, because he's got the boss pants on.
Yeah, he does have the boss pants on.
But that's not a problem.
Right, that's not a problem. I have played in groups where, like, for example, I played in a D&D game where everybody knew each other, but all of those everybody knowing each other ultimately ended back at person A. If person A died, B through F were all going to go their separate ways. Now, some of them may have left in duos or trios, but they were all going their separate ways. That's not the case in this game.
That's right. There might be shots fired as to who takes over if Wayne gets aced, but,
but that
three
could be
of
fun
the four
too.
Remaining people will absolutely stay and remain a cohesive fighting unit.
Yeah, and I think origin stories can be really fun, origins of a group, especially if you're doing like a superhero story or something.
Yes.
That's why I think it's definitely something that shouldn't be taken off the table. You can have a cohesive group that's just as cohesive, but you do need to have some thought about it ahead of time. If everyone just comes to the table without that in the mindset right. of here's what's going to happen, here's how they're going to form, then sometimes you do get stuck with that.
Absolutely.
Well, that was awkward.
And I think that if you change that from how and when did to how and when will, you can still have a great game. But as you noted, Wayne, you have to pay extra attention to the other questions. Because look, if the game master starts off with you guys are sitting in a hotel and the upper floors catch on fire and there's a woman screaming to be saved, and one of these guys, a sociopathic jackass who's not motivated by that, while everyone else in the group is, we've already failed. This game has already gone down to the GM cat herding.
Sometimes the GM can let the cat run off the cliff and tell the player to make a new cat. I've done that before.
Yes, and that is a foul way of...
Of course, sometimes that breaks the game.
Bingo. Number four, are the characters located in the same place or willing to travel to a common meeting place? If not, and I realize that meeting place could move, for example, it could be a ship. If not, how will the characters be brought together for the game? This actually more presupposes they haven't met yet. Because if they have met, then clearly they have some place they met. Pretty straightforward question. Number five, what major events have they shared in their past? The answer could maybe nothing. But if these are people who know each other, look, when you give them things they've shared in their past, this does two things. It helps to build a sense of shared history, and that shared history helps to build present and future roleplay. So you know why these people are together, because, hey, they were all there at the Battle of the Scillian Blitz, to grab a Mass Effect reference, just to avoid D&D all the time. On the flip side, this also gives you something where in the future, you know, you can have a roleplay moment, say, look, we stuck with each other through the Blitz. We can stick together through this.
You know, one comment I had on that, too, was maybe it's not just shared events. Maybe it's also similar experiences. People that have gone through the same things in their childhood or in their life may instinctively have a shared connection. We were both in this war, but we weren't necessarily in the same unit. They have something in common right there from the beginning.
Questions 6 and 7, I think, quite frankly, are the most critical in this document. 6, on a personal level, what keeps the characters together? If you can't explain it, make a new character. If you have no reason why these people would operate together, and when I say no reason, I'm going to even expand that to say you do not have a meaningful reason. If their only reason is cash, what happens when all of a sudden cash isn't a motivation anymore? You have to have a meaningful reason that these people are going to stick together. Otherwise, this game is on its way to disintegration. And I think that can be expounded upon by question 7 of what goals are shared by all the characters. Everybody's got their own goals. Everyone has their own views on how to reach those goals. I mean, look at this podcast. We all have different reasons to be here. But you know what? We have shared experiences. We have personal interactions and personal relationships that keep us together. And we have a goal that keeps us coming to these mics every week, which is to put out a podcast. Now, we each may have a different reason for doing that, but nonetheless, we do still have a goal that we share.
You know, and we may have multiple reasons for what we do. My comment that I wrote down for that one was short-term and long-term. You know, there's a big difference between a short-term goal and a long-term goal, but if those line up with other people, those goals will be more likely to be accomplished.
Question 8, and I want to note carefully the phrasing of this one. Is there enough moral agreement among the characters to keep them from abhorring each other? Notice I said enough moral agreement to keep them from abhorring each other. I don't think it's necessary for these characters to be homogenous. In fact, that makes for boring role play. Now, maybe in some groups that makes sense. If you're playing a group where you're all paladins from the same order, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I've run that one.
You really should be pretty morally identical. But the real important thing here is, once again, not that all the characters hold hands and sing songs and agree on everything. That's not important to a game, I don't think. In fact, those disagreements are what make great RP some of the time. But the real issue here is, are you going to have a group where at some point in the future, one character is obviously inevitably going to say, why am I with this asshole? And I've been in that game. And it wasn't always my character on either side of this, but where, I mean, we saw it coming a mile away where it's like, there is no way, once the immediate threat is dealt with, these two characters are going to have anything to do with each other. They hate each other. They stand for radically different things. They have radically different views.
Your people ate my people.
Yeah. And I feel no remorse for that. And you feel no forgiveness towards me. You know, this is an entrenched position. We're never budging from. This is just stupid. I mean, once again, does this document fix everything in your game? No, but don't set yourself up for failure. Question 9, is there any potential conflict? This is similar to 8. Is there any potential conflict between personalities, goals, or ethics that could be some so great the plot will fizzle out or players will be excluded? I think that's mostly self-explanatory. The phrase I want to harp on there is a player will be excluded. I have seen games where the party sticks together, but it's three guys and the odd man out. And the odd man
our
out
game.
is suddenly never told anything, never included on anything. And quite frankly, it doesn't.
Pat and I are nodding over the microphones.
I'm not getting involved.
Well, I wrote that down as.
Where's Steiner? Chad is Kurita.
I wrote down secrets as part of that, too, because in our last game, that was something that came up. When the group shrunk for a little while, my character didn't know Pat's secret.
Yeah.
So the exclusion happened. You have two characters that are completely knowledgeable. It wasn't an intentional thing. You know, it was all the characters were designed to have this interconnectivity. But when the group suddenly shrunk, this division grew. And it just happened out of nowhere.
Right. You can place blame on the person who made the odd man out. You can place blame on the rest of the group. It doesn't matter. The end result is not a fun experience, which is not the point of gaming. Number 10. Last question on here. What plot elements, and there may be none, once again, if the group has yet to meet, what plot elements are in the group's history the game master can use in his or her plot? The great thing about this is it creates a sense of continuity from your past adventures together to your present and future. With our game, it starts off with you guys are all part of the same mercenary corps. What happened pre-plot by your guys' agreement was you landed on a planet. Your group consisted of what's called a company. In Battletech terms, that means you had roughly 12 units. And a unit could be like a platoon of infantry or a single mech or a couple of vehicles. It can be broken down a few ways. But they had roughly 12 groupings or 12 singular units that were present. And they said in their backstory, we had just suffered a horrible defeat. We're on the ropes. We're still on the planet. We're trying to find a way off. That's where I picked the game up. This was something in your guys' history you shared together. Now, there are also things in the broader group, but three of the five characters all went to school together. there are things that you guys share that I can leverage into the future. There are things that I can use to know that, hey, if I drop this, this is going to interest at least some portion of, if not all of, the players that are present.
My next note here is actually, what if a new player is joining the group or a new character's coming in? We all chose for this game that we wanted a high level of lethality. So let's say 3-4 games in, my character gets capped in the head.
Okay.
You've gone through all of this trouble to build this group cohesion. How do you introduce a new character into this group cohesion without it coming off as odd, without that person being the odd man out? Because all these other guys are already there.
Hire somebody to pilot that stinger.
I think it's a great question.
I got other classmates that don't have jobs, I'm sure.
That was actually going to be one of my two answers. One is, look, if you have taken your time to design the shared history of this group, and then, of course, later, hereafter, to design the detailed history of the characters, it is possible there is an obvious opening, whether the person is named or simply the role is implied. Classmate, Jane Smith, okay? Doesn't matter how specific it is, but there may be an obvious opening where someone could come forward who's maybe been in the background, but clearly does share some goals, share some experiences. This could be someone who's an active NPC in the current game, and the game master simply gives up control of that character. This could be someone from your past.
I've been that guy when my character died.
This could be, once again, just a role of, hey, the three of you went to school together. Surely you weren't the only three in the academy. You must have had a fourth classmate. Wayne, in this case, you're inheriting the Mercenary Corps from your father. You defined other family members. How many friends and family members did you not define that you and I could work out? I think, and this leads me to point two, whether it is a brand new character completely from the outside or an inside character, the big thing you have to look at is accept, okay, it is possible every question about shared history can be X'd out because they're simply irrelevant. This is a brand new person. We cannot tie this man or woman into the group's past for the simple reason they weren't part of the past. But you can still tie them into the rest. You can still look at, does this person share ethics? Does this person share goals? Is this person sufficiently similar to everyone else to fit into the dynamic of the party that is already established? Of course, there's going to require some hand-waving, some concessions, maybe a little bit of awkwardness as you try to introduce this person, explain why suddenly this guy has to step forward and fill these shoes. But I think you can't...
Well, he might fill a different pair of shoes. I doubt that if Wayne's head gets blown off tomorrow, his replacement character is going to be the owner of the mercenary company. The group dynamic reconfigures itself.
I would expect one of the other characters to step up and become the leader if my character died. Yeah,
or be handed it by your will or your father's will or who knows what.
If my character were to die in the course of the campaign, I would probably want to come in with a rookie character. Maybe he hasn't been in a mech before.
Actually, speaking of which, Wayne, given the fact that you guys have agreed to a lethal game, I may require you to eventually work out a will.
Yeah, now that Dad is MIA and probably KIA, your character is probably concerned with what happens if and when he dies.
Yeah, though I realize you haven't had time to sort that out yet. But within the next half dozen games, I'm probably going to have your accountant to bring this up.
Oh, I already planned on promoting John.
So
excellent.
All right, so with that out of the way, once you have those questions worked out, the actual group template is just three questions. In a few words, what is this group supposed to be? An Intersphere Mercenary Corps in the year 3038. What common experiences has the party been through? Here you could list out the shared time in the academy. You can list out the campaigns you guys have been on. You can list out your guys' current issues on Althea.
Even though we didn't all go to school, we've all been part of this mercenary for at least a little while. And now we've all just faced death and gotten away with it.
Last of all, and this is important for the game master to start the game, what's the current status of the group and its members? Where are they? What are they doing? What sorts of things are they interested in right now? This gives the game master a snapshot of not just what you have in common, but when the game begins, where are you? What are you doing? What are you up to? And this helps the game master figure out, okay, if they have these goals in common and they're in this situation right now, then here's how I can get them into the plot that I want to run. Here's how I can get them moving the direction I want them to go. That is really a very forward-looking question.
So, Dan, one thing you have listed on this thing is basically that it's a document that you use, just use it to get things rolling and then put it aside. I think it's something that could come back up mid-game. if you find you've gotten too far from the template and suddenly you're having issues 6 months in, 8 months into the game, I don't think there's anything wrong with pulling this template back out and just looking through it. Maybe the group template has changed at that point. Maybe too many characters have died and been replaced.
That's the thing I was going to give, is I realize people evolve, and part of that evolution may mean people grow apart. That's roleplay. The reason I said I don't know you need to keep this up to date as the game progresses is simply because I was not trying to add paperwork. The purpose of this was to get the game off to a good start. Nobody can guarantee how the game is going to go once it actually starts. But I do agree with you, Wayne, that I think if you hit a point where the group has either evolved, characters have left, players have left, or characters have been killed and replaced to the point that you have a whole new group, it may be necessary to sit down and do a new one of these. And part of that process may be some concessions of, look, the four characters we have now just don't have anything in common. We need to either get these guys out of the picture, or we need to work out a plan of how they can come together, or even be willing to say, screw it. You know what? This is not a history book. It's a game. Let's just hand wave some stuff so they have enough.
You don't have to do that. We can make a little council like we had with this prelude and say, okay, Dan, we need another flashpoint to really drive us together. You could figure that out in 10 minutes.
Well, I'm not saying you have to. I'm not even saying it's the best plan. I think, quite frankly, sitting down and having characters come into this that made sense in the first place and blah, blah, blah is the best approach. All I'm saying is, if all else fails, no, I am not going to play some hard ass line of, we will absolutely not do this because it breaks continuity.
No, of course you try to keep the game going.
Is, I will sacrifice anything in the game on the altar of fun. And that includes consistency and internal consistency. Now, don't get me wrong, I want to keep those things.
I don't know if fun can survive the death of consistency.
It
can survive consistency being poked in the eye and spit
on.
Well,
maybe it can,
but not slain.
And once again, every situation's unique.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get too, to use the word again, dogmatic about any of this. There's different answers to every situation. My first hope would be we can sit down, have a powwow, and figure out something that can make our characters come closer together. Figure out, you know what, maybe they disagree on these 10 things, but they do agree on these two things. Maybe these two things need to move to the forward of the plot.
Yeah.
But
you can do that.
All I'm saying is, if all else fails, I am not against doing some hand waving, saying, you know what,
I don't think that needs to fail.
I'm just going
to
get rid of my character's xenophobia because it just ain't working.
That can be made consistent.
It can.
My character gets his life saved by a Steiner, and he's a Curitan. The end. Well, no longer racist.
The reason I suggested, you know, going back to the document, if there's an issue, isn't necessarily to hand wave anything or even retcon it. This document seems like it would be a good document to point out where the problem is. If everything's going smoothly, there's no need to touch this again. But if your game's hit a stumbling point and it's, you know, you've noticed that the group is pretty far from its original mixture, maybe that is something to do just to figure out what the problem is.
And this is going to be pure semantic nitpicking, but that's what we geeks are good at. But Wayne, here's where I would...
Episode two, what now?
Yeah, this is what I would disagree with, Wayne, is here's the thing. If the group has changed or its individuals have evolved to the point this document's no longer applicable, I don't think you per se can go back to it. I think what you need to do is sit down and write up a new one. I think you kind of need to treat this as, okay, we have a brand new group, except now our shared history, instead of having been written out on paper prior to the game, was now built through the game. But nonetheless, we effectively have a group we need to figure out how to tighten up and get together.
And that's what I meant
almost
by,
say you need a fresh one and start over.
That's what I meant by come back to it.
Right.
If you don't know what the problem is, I think this does a good job of pointing out problems, potential problems, or if your game's ongoing, current problems.
Use that way as sort of a health check or a physical for your group. I think this could maybe bring to light some, you know, you get down to a question, whatever, and suddenly realize we have no good answer to this. You've just hit on what the problem is with your group. So that is a good point. That's kind of, like, I guess, a way of looking at it I hadn't thought of before. All right. I think we're going to go ahead and end this one here. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I believe we will be back next time, I think, with an interview. I want to remind you, though, to check the show notes for the link to convention stuff, to the prizes that we're giving away, et cetera, et cetera. And expect Fear the Con stuff very soon. First weekend of May. I'm looking forward to seeing all of you there. So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.